Hello there, and welcome to The Bitch Fix, a podcast for women who want to jam out on their lives, live in harmony with their hormones, and reclaim their mood, energy, and mojo. I'm Christine McCarroll, functional nutritionist and women's health straight talker, and I'm here to tell it like it is on all things health, happiness, and hormones for women. So shake off that cape, Superwoman, because we're here to launch this thing. Well, hey girl, and welcome to episode 106 of The Bitch Fix. So, fair warning, I am feeling a little soapboxy today, and I feel like maybe a little bit of a rant is coming on. You might have guessed it from the title of today's episode. I'm going to do my best to be like as moderate as I can. But as you guys know, I have two daughters and they are 11 and just turned 14. So they are really just at the age where all of the hormones are just kind of like going off like little bombs in the house all day, every day. But also they're the age where in the schools, they are learning about puberty and body changes. So obviously with what I do for a living, lots of conversations have been had in my house about body changes. And not all of them have been what my girls would have wanted necessarily. But from my perspective, if I'm at least putting the information out there, I think it's going to be like a little worm wiggling its way into their brains. So even if they sigh or they roll their eyes or they're only kind of sort of listening, hopefully what I'm telling them is going to get in there. And then, of course, I hope as well that they will keep feeling like they can talk to me about this stuff and that I am providing way better information and better context than what is being received just from school. So in one of these conversations recently, one daughter shared with me that it was mentioned in her puberty class, which is called Growing and Changing. She calls it GAC, which I think is hilarious. Like she says, oh, GAC. But in this puberty class, something was told, which I think was somewhat of a, I don't know if it was an offhand comment or if it was just kind of like at the end, this recommendation. But the instructor said that something along the lines that they should all the girls in the class, be thinking about getting on the pill because it would just help them with their cramps. Periods are hard and terrible, and you just want to not be dealing with that every single month. And this magical little pill was just going to smooth everything out. And thankfully, my daughter asked me about this, right? Like, she knew I would have a take on it. I don't know. I don't know if I was doing something else in my practice, if she would have asked me. I don't know. But she knows I talk about health and hormones for women all day. And so she wanted to know. And it got me just, as you can imagine, super, super pissed. And I was actually not pissed about the birth control part of the pill. I don't know that at her age, I would have loved that conversation to be had, but I do recognize that conversations are going to be had around birth control. I want to be the one to have those conversations, but I know they're going to happen at school too. What really pissed me off was that it was just so blasé from someone who I can only assume either knows nothing about how hormones work other than whatever the training is that they're trained to train. They don't know what the pill does to the body. They certainly don't know anything about my individual daughter's health or her genetics or anything else that would play a part in how she might respond to the pill. So I don't think you can just get up and be like, here's some medication. Everybody should be taking this and not know anything about the people that you're telling that to. So we all respond really differently to different things. And here's what's funny. This is an example of this same daughter. So when this same daughter was a baby, I was about to take her on her very first flight. I think she was like 4 months old. And I was a new mom and totally like just the whole thing of flying by myself was terrifying me. And someone told me, okay, well, she's not quite at the age technically for you to give her Benadryl, but you should give her Benadryl. And first of all, the idea of just giving my baby Benadryl for no good reason, just to put her sleep, just didn't sit well with me. But the other thing was, I am actually somebody who responds opposite to Benadryl. So where Benadryl makes most people super tired, it makes me super wired. And I was like, oh, that would just be my luck, right? So I would give this baby Benadryl, hoping it was going to help her to go to sleep on the airplane. And what it would do would jack her up. And maybe she would feel super weird or anxious, and she would maybe cry the whole time and just not be sleeping on the plane as the last thing I wanted. So it's like, of course, I'm not just going to give my baby Benadryl when I don't know what's going to happen, right? So fast forward, the same daughter into her teenage years. And now someone's like, here, just take this pill. We have no idea what it's going to do to her body. We do know, though, what it can do to bodies, right? And so this woman clearly just didn't know anything about it other than what maybe she had been told or had tried herself at some point, which is like, oh, maybe you won't have such bad cramps. But pretty much any other girl in that room who heard that message, so besides my daughter who could come home and ask me, someone knowledgeable about this, any other girl in the room, her mom probably doesn't know what I know. And maybe like me, when I was 16 and I had horrendous periods, maybe she would just think, I need to help my daughter and it's going to help regulate, I'm going to air quotes, regulate her cycle to be on the pill. And, you know, that's what happened to me. I didn't know anything. My mom was doing her very best, but she didn't know anything either. And that was the recommendation. We're just going to regulate my cycle because I was having such horrible, like complete misery cramps every single month. Only what happened was for me, not just that my period got regulated, again, there's my air quotes, because when you're on the pill, it's actually not what's happening. So that isn't what happened because you're not actually having a regular period every month when you're on the pill. What happens is that you don't have a period at all. What you're having is the illusion of a period. And that illusion makes everybody feel better because it looks like everything's happening the way it's supposed to every month, only it's not. What's actually happening is that when you come off of those hormones every single month, you get a withdrawal bleed. So it's the withdrawal from the hormones that's causing the bleed. It is not the natural process of ovulation, which is what a natural period looks like. So what actually happened to me was that my body really never had a chance to get regulated or balanced because what I was having wasn't a period, right? And I was just having this fake period for years and years instead of a real period. And so that means that I wasn't ovulating. And now we know, like what I'm going to share with you on this episode today, we know that ovulation is a powerful, powerful event in a woman's body. And as women, what we actually want is as many ovulations as possible throughout our lives for the health benefits. So for me, I got on the pill when I was 16. I was off and on probably for 10 years. And I was unknowingly stripping away so many long-term health benefits from myself. Like I have said over and over to my clients, if I could go back and undo one thing from my own health history, it would be not to have taken the pill for so long and to have taken away all of those ovulations because I can't go get them back, right? I'm 43. I'm probably nearing the end of the time where I'm ovulating. I don't get to go and get those back. They're over. So as you can imagine, this is not what I want for my daughters. I want my daughters to have as many healthy ovulations as they can to maximize their health. So I decided not to go off on my daughter's growing and changing instructor. I didn't think that was going to be very helpful. And I was also just so bad at that point. I was like, this is a bad use of my energy. But instead, I'm going to tell you guys everything that I wish we were telling our daughters about ovulation, what healthy ovulation is doing for them, for you, for us, and why we should not be suppressing symptoms with the birth control pill. Okay, so I want to actually just talk about the parts of your body, the systems in your body that are supported by healthy ovulation today. And the first one, number one on my list, is bone health. So if we look at your bone mass, if we had kind of, if you look back at a woman's life, and if we have a normal age of starting your period, the potential bone mass of those women, if they have, the longer they have it, the more frequently they have ovulation, there is a huge statistical significance of reduction of fractures after menopause and also later in life having hip and spine fracture risks. So that bone mass in the hip and the bone mineral density that max potential bone mass, that happens between ages 16 and 19, right? So ages 16 and 19 is a time where a lot of young girls are put on the birth control pill to quote unquote regulate their hormones or regulate their periods. So if they're going on the pill in that time, they are completely missing out. By the way, I was on the pill between 16 and 19, right? My potential bone mineral density maximum for my life has now been decreased. So that achieving that ovulatory cycle for girls in that time between 16 and 19, for the whole body and for their whole lives, they're going to have a better bone mineral density. Right. And you think about the number one, I believe this is true. I haven't actually looked it up recently, but the number one cause for women to go into some sort of assisted living and really never be able to live unassisted again is in their older years, having a fall and breaking their hip. Right. So you think about this bone mineral density that could be improved early in life just by having a period, just by not being on the pill. And then when they're in their later years, not having the risks or the same risks of falling and fracturing their hips or their spines, right? This is huge. So next on my list is our brain health. So as women, our primary sex hormones, I think this is not news to you, they are estrogen and progesterone. And both of those can cross the blood-brain barrier. So the blood-brain barrier, if you didn't know, is essentially this physiological, actual physical barrier that is meant to protect the brain from toxic things coming in. Now, unfortunately, and this is a whole other topic, right? But unfortunately, there are chemicals that can cross the blood-brain barrier and cause problems. But we want our estrogen and progesterone crossing that blood-brain barrier because they are benefiting our moods. So in the first half of the cycle, when estrogen is higher, and just briefly, I'm going to rewind. I'm going to say I have done podcast episodes about kind of charting. I've done it about ovulation. So if you're like, I really want to start back with the basics, there are some episodes about those basics. But estrogen is higher in the first part of your menstrual cycle. And then in the follicular phase, so the follicle is developing before you ovulate. And then after ovulation, progesterone tends to come up and should be quite a bit higher. And it's definitely higher than estrogen in that second phase. So with estrogen being more dominant in the first half of the cycle, we are increasing serotonin receptor levels and dopamine synthesis in the first half of the cycle. So serotonin, you may have heard of as your feel-good hormone. I actually did a whole podcast episode on serotonin as well. Go back and search that. But those serotonin levels serotonin receptor levels are increased. And then dopamine synthesis is also increased. And so dopamine is one of these neurotransmitters that plays a role in how we feel pleasure. So, oh my gosh, you guys, is that not so important? Don't you want for yourself and your daughters to be feeling pleasure? So that dopamine is actually also a really big part of our unique ability as humans to plan and to think. So we want this particular neurotransmitter to be working well, and we are getting that dopamine synthesis increased by the healthy levels of natural estrogen in the first half of the cycle. By the way, if you are thinking to yourself that like the synthetic estrogen and progesterone in the pill would be doing the same things for you, it does not. So I'm just going to like lay that out right now. We are only getting these benefits from our naturally endogenously inside of our bodies produced hormones. We are not getting the same benefit from exogenous, the outside of the body hormones, right? So then in that second half of the cycle, we get that takeover of progesterone. So progesterone comes up in the second half of the cycle. And progesterone is very healing, right? So again, if you're thinking about the word itself, progest for gestation, we are nourishing, nurturing potentially another life. That's the reason progesterone comes up in the second half of the cycle. So it is a very healing kind of maternal hormone, if you will. So it maintains and heals those parts of our brain in the second half of the cycle. We also are getting dopamine-induced glutamate released. So dopamine, again, that's our pleasure neurotransmitter. It's signaling the release of glutamate, which is a neurotransmitter that is so important that over 90% of all of your brain synapses have it. And it basically is sending signals to all the other cells in the central nervous system. So your whole nervous system is going to be governed by this neurotransmitter of glutamate, which is going to be triggered by dopamine, which is triggered by progesterone, right? So we have this lovely little cascade that's happening in the second half of the cycle that tends to make women feel more mellow and chill and calm in that second half of the menstrual cycle. So women typically, even women who have anxiety, have a little bit less anxiety in the second half of the cycle, as long as progesterone is working the way that it should. And we also get progesterone potentiating, which just means it is it's helping out GABA. So GABA is something you can actually take. I think I've probably talked about it on the podcast before. You can take it as a supplement, but it is a it is something that we are producing endogenously in our bodies as well. And so the metabolite of progesterone, so just like as your body has handled broken down progesterone, we get allopregnanolone, and it is a GABA receptor agonist. So that means that as progesterone comes higher, GABA function increases. So GABA, if you've ever seen it as a supplement or you know what it is, basically you take it to calm down, right? So I actually have used it myself before. Personally, I've used it with some clients. It helps to help you feel calm and give you a good mood. And for some women, it really helps with sleep. So it is also, GABA has sometimes been, there's some early research, so I can't say it's like, you know, fully green light, but it might be used as a treatment for PMDD, which is premenstrual dysphoric disorder, which is a much more severe and significant form of PMS. So we like GABA. GABA makes us feel happy and calm. So all of that cascade is happening from the natural release of progesterone that we get from ovulation. Right. So if you go back and listen to my podcast episode that was like the story of ovulation. When we ovulate, we have this little body that's left over from that follicle, and it's called the corpus luteum, and it starts to produce progesterone. So it's this natural progesterone, not the synthetic progestin that is in any sort of birth control pill. So this natural progesterone is what gives us all of those benefits, those brain benefits that I was just telling you about. The other thing about this is that your brain is maturing in that time period. So your prefrontal cortex, which is like the thinking really part of your brain, not just like the responsive part of the brain, like the amygdala that's just responding to danger all the time, but your thinking part of your brain is getting fully developed into your mid-20s. So if you're thinking, first of all, I will just say, I have been joking with my husband about this for years, like, when I see teenagers being crazy, like now we have some, but when I would see teenagers, I'd be like, oh, it's okay. Their brains aren't even fully developed yet. And I was joking, but it's true, right? Like the brain isn't finished fully developing and forming until the mid-20s, which is like crazy late, you guys, right? Like we expect a whole lot of things out of our kids and teenagers, but the reality is their brains are not fully formed and functioning yet. Now, we need those hormones, that natural estrogen and progesterone as women, to be helping the brain to mature and be protected in those critical years. So those years between like 16 and the early 20s, we are getting that maturation. I'm hoping anyway, we should be. But if we have synthetic hormones, we might be inhibiting that process. Now, I will tell you that brain fog, first of all, is one of the most common things that I hear about women complaining about in my practice. So I usually get a laundry list of everything that is not working. And brain fog is right up there as one of the top issues. And it is a well-established side effect of the pill, right? So if you have brain fog and you are on the birth control pill, I would be considering that as a potential contributor to how you're feeling. I will say for me, I have said this since even like when I first got off the pill, when I decided I want to get pregnant in my 20s, this was like way before I even had studied anything, right? I didn't even know anything. All I knew was how he felt. And what I said was, it felt like the Claritin commercial. I don't even know if they have this Claritin commercial on the air anymore, but maybe you know it. They would have like this clear, well, like kind of like semi-sheer film over an image. And then they would say, like, with Claritin, they would like peel off that film and like, this is how you feel, right? So Claritin is an antihistamine. So be like, okay, if you're having allergies, you're just feeling like this film on your day, but you take off the film with the Claritin. That's how I felt when I came off the pill, right? It felt like that Claritin commercial. It felt like that film had been ripped off. And I was like, holy crap, like life is in Technicolor now. I didn't even know that that had been affecting me so much until I wasn't on it anymore. And how could I have known? Because I had been on it for so many years, right? So brain function, huge. Then the last one that I want to talk about is heart health. Now, if you've been following me on Instagram, I have been talking about, and I think I actually, yeah, I did do a podcast episode on this. I have been wearing this strap, the hoop strap, for a few months now. And one of the big things that this kind of tracker, I guess, is telling me is about my heart rate variability. And the reason for this is because heart rate variability is such an important indicator of total body health. So if your heart is healthy and normal, it's not just like a metronome where it's just like beat, 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 right? It is, there are these milliseconds between those heartbeats where there should be constant variation. So it's not something you're like aware of. Like, it's not like, you know, you shouldn't be feeling that your heart is beating differently, but it's that our, the heart rate beats per minute. And also those little spaces in between those heartbeats should have variability. It should not be the same. We actually don't want it to be the same all the time. It's counterintuitive, I will say. When I first learned this, I was like, what? Don't I want my heart to be beating exactly the same all the time? No, no, you don't actually. There should be variability, and it is a health indicator. So my heart rate variability is something I keep an eye on now. It tells me a lot about what I've done the day before, how well I've recovered, how well my exercise or food or sleep or anything else is working for me. So we get some support for this heart rate variability in with our menstrual cycle, right? So when we are in the first phase of the cycle, so again, kind of just looking at the natural cycle, in the menstrual cycle and in that first follicular phase where estrogen tends to be higher, we actually have a significantly faster heart rate than in the second half of the cycle. So around ovulation and in the luteal phase, when progesterone comes up, and I just told you that that we're going to be getting like the healing kind of benefit of progesterone, it's faster in those, in that phase, right? So the ovulatory and luteal phase tends to be faster when progesterone is up. So the other thing is estrogen helps us to prevent coronary artery calcification. So that is a big issue as we get older. And I don't even mean that much older, guys. I'm talking like late 30s that this can start to develop. And this is when we have calcium building up in our arteries and those blood vessels get more narrow. And then we could develop heart disease, which is still a leading cause of death for women. But estrogen, again, natural estrogen, we do not get this from the synthetic stuff. Natural estrogen helps to stop that buildup of calcium in the arteries. And it also gives the heart the ability to pump harder when it needs to and to rest easier when it doesn't need to. So that ability to kind of speed up and slow down as necessary is really mediated by estrogen. And then progesterone also helps to drop blood pressure by something called vasodilation, which just means that your blood vessels are dilating or getting bigger, right? So think about like your pupils dilating, that's when they're getting bigger. Same things with your blood vessels. So vasodilation, we get increased size of our blood vessels, and that will then decrease blood pressure because we don't have the same amount of pressure from the blood that's trying to come through a small blood vessel. So those are some of just the changes and the benefits that we get from having a healthy, natural menstrual cycle. There was a paper that came out in 2017 in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology. And what they said was that women who had fewer total menstrual cycles over the course of their lifetime had a greater risk for incidence of heart failure after menopause, right? So we are, again, looking at long-term health. Now, I know this is really hard when you're in the moment. You're like, I just want to make things easier. It's hard to be thinking of yourself in your like 60s and beyond. You're like, no, I just want to feel better right now. But if we're thinking about things like this greater incidence for heart failure after menopause, if you had fewer menstrual cycles, or a greater chance of breaking your hip or your spine later, wouldn't you want to help yourself out in your later years by having more menstrual cycles? And by having more menstrual cycles, I'm actually saying is having more ovulation and having more of those protective hormones coming up and benefiting you throughout your life. So those are just three of the big things that we get from big benefits that we get from ovulation. I didn't even go into some of the downsides of what happens with the pill when we are affecting nutrient input, nutrient depletions we get from the pill. That was a whole podcast episode. I didn't talk about how you can get gut changes that could contribute to autoimmunity. Definitely talked about that in another episode. Didn't talk about how those gut changes could also impact thyroid hormone. Again, that's in another episode. So there's a lot of other negatives, but I wanted to actually just talk about the positives of how you are getting protective benefit from the natural cycling of your hormones and why you would actually want to be ovulating more frequently throughout your life instead of doing something that prevents ovulation for decades. So episode title, Lies We Tell Our Daughters. The lie, I think, is that you're just going to take some little magic pill and everything's going to be fine and there are no side effects. And you know that's not what I stand for. Like, if you have been here any amount of time, you know this is some bullshit that I don't believe in. But I don't want us to be continuing to pass this same narrative on to our daughters. So as a mother with girls in their kind of preteen and teenage years, this is a big soapbox for me. I don't want to continue the pattern of just having misinformation and not being able to talk to our daughters about the long-term impacts of health choices that they are making now. So hopefully this is some food for thought for you. If you are a mom with daughters, maybe this is helping you to have these conversations with your daughters. And hope this has been helpful. And everyone, I hope you have a wonderful rest of your week and weekend, and I will talk to you next time. Hey, if you've been on the hormonal roller coaster and want to know how to put the theories and strategies shared on this podcast to work for your body, I want to invite you to join me in my program, The Bitch Fix in Six Steps to Happy Hormones. I'll help you heal your hormones naturally so you can get your mood, energy, and mojo back and live the badass life you were designed for. This is the work I've done with hundreds of women, and it can work for you too. To learn more, go to thebitchfixin6.com. I can't wait to meet you inside.